one. Can you put this on, please? And this one as well. Yep, and this onto the other side. That's also a clip. It's backwards. You're taping the inside of your pocket right now. Okay, there we go. Thank you. Nothing. No thanks. We'll just get started. This is the last time I've ever done.
Yeah.
Digital? Yeah. You're already 2 minutes behind. My fault.
The Parshin Dvarim Yutes Shmor Nafshecha Ma'od Minishmartem Mi'od L'Nafshol Seichel. The Torah commands us to be very careful about our lives. Man is not considered the Baal HaBos over his own life. It doesn't belong to him. It's sacred and it has to be protected. One is obligated to avoid danger. Lest one say, can't I expose myself to a dangerous situation? Hashem will protect me. That's not the hashkafa. That's not the approach. The Rambam dedicates an entire chapter in Hilchos Rotzeach Ushmiras HaNefesh, Perek Yud Aleph, to the laws of being careful. The Rambam writes, Harvei Dvarim Asru Chachamim, there are many categories and scenarios in which the Chachamim prohibited us from exposing ourselves to danger. The Rambam writes that if we violate these prohibitions, then we are punished by malchus, by lashes. According to most poskim, if a person exposes himself or herself to danger, he violates a d'oraisa. This is not only a rabbinic law, the rabbis expanded it. The Rambam writes that if a person has a roof and he doesn't fence the roof, he doesn't fulfill the mitzvah of makeh, not only is he in violation of an essay, but also a losas. And if you ask the question, well, let Hashem take care of me, I want to quote to you a number of cases that took place back in the Beis HaMikdash and how the Gemara, the Mishnah, the Gemara understands these situations. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Shkolim with regard to the Shulchan, you know, the showbread was placed at the beginning of the week and removed at the end. Kisiduro kach siluko. There was a great miracle in the table. And the bread was as fresh when they took it off the shulchan at the end of the week as it was when they put it on. And yet, the Mishnah establishes in Shkolim that the table was not allowed to be made of shelves of metal, because metal conducts heat, and the heat will speed up the process of spoilage. The Mefarshim say, "Ain't sochem al anes." Yes, we are guaranteed a miracle in the Beis HaMikdash, but we don't rely on the miracle. The Gemara tells us in Masechet Yoma that there never was a situation of a Kohen Gadol entering into Yom Kippur in a state of tumah. This was a guaranteed miracle that took place annually in the Beis HaMikdash. And yet, the halacha requires taking every single care to guarantee that the Kohen Gadol does not become tameh. Very strict dietary rules that apply to the Kohen Gadol before he begins his fast on Leil Yom Kippur. And the Mefarshim say, because Ein Somchen Al Hanes, despite the miracle, we don't rely on the miracle. The Gemara in the fifth parak of Pesachim tells us that on Erev Pesach, when the Jewish people flooded the Azara in the Beis HaMikdash to bring the Korban Pesach, and it was very crowded, Halach has to guarantee security to make sure that there was no overflow in the Azara. And the miracle was guaranteed that the gates of the Azara would close automatically. But yet, Rava insists that it was the obligation of the Levium to see to it that the gates were closed. Because Ein Somchin Al Nes, we don't rely on miracles. The Mishnah in the fourth parak of Shkolim tells us that the wine that was supplied by the Jewish nation for the Nesachim was guaranteed not to spoil. And yet the Halacha took absolute precautions to see to it that the wine would not spoil. Once again, we don't rely on miracles. The Ramban, in his commentary to Sefer Dvarim, tells us that at the end of days, following the ultimate Geula, the redemption, there will be no need to go to physicians. Again, this is not something you want to tell your doctor friends, because they're not going to have too much employment at that point. Because the Ramban says that at the end of days we will be living on miracles. And there will be no difference between Teva, nature, and miracles. But says the Ramban, although that's true, we haven't yet reached that period of time. The Ramban tells us that when the Jewish people went out to battle, they first had to take a census, called Isha Yotzei Tzava, there was a Pekudim, accounting. And why, says the Ramban? Even though the battles to conquer Eretz Yisrael were guaranteed to be supernatural, miraculous, but nevertheless, we have to conduct ourselves in wartime exactly as the kingships, the nations of the world would be, and we have to take a census and know who is going out to battle. The Ramban, who authored a tremendous work of Hashkofa called the Drashot HaRan in his 8th Drasha, formulates the principle that Teva, that nature, is sacred. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants the world to operate within the framework of the natural order. And even when God has to bring about a miracle, He will limit the amount of supernatural elements that take place. Everything has to be as close to nature as possible. The Gemara tells us about Rav and Shmuel that they would never walk by a weak kind of wall lest it fall on them. The Gemara tells us that one should never traverse a bridge if it's shaky. And when the children, the Tashbar, were taken to schools on a daily basis, the city municipality had to guarantee that on both sides of the bridge there were schools so that none of the children would have to be brought across the bridge. And even if Hashem guarantees us a miracle, we don't rely on it. We know that there's divine compassion and God protects us, but nevertheless, we have to do our maximum, al pi derech hateva, to protect ourselves. And this is the background that leads me to the discussion of today. My question is as follows. If we just take a look at Jewish history, even superficially, we'll find situations time and time again in which Jews, and I'm not just talking about rank and file citizens, but rather the greats and the giants of Jewish history, have exposed themselves to danger. And I'd like to mention a few cases because I'm building up a case to ask a question, to understand how do we justify those greats. My first question is from Parshas Lech Lecha. The Torah records that Avraham Avinu gathered together his troops to fight a military campaign against the four most powerful kings on the globe at that time. And what was his great battalion of troops consisting of 318 yeshiva bachim? How is it possible that Avraham Avinu would expose himself to such great danger? Question number two. The Gemara in Brachos on Daf Lamed Gimel tells us about Rab Chanina ben Dosa, one of the great Tanoim. The rumor was out that there was a very dangerous serpent. And ladies, I don't want you to have any nightmares about this, but this serpent was lurking in and out of its hole, and The Gemara tells us that they called upon Reb Chanina ben Dosa to do something. Reb Chanina ben Dosa took his foot after he located the char, the hole where the serpent hid, and placed it over the hole. The serpent bit him, and the serpent died, and it was a great miracle. But how was it possible, according to halakha, that Reb Chanina ben Dosa would do such a thing and deliberately expose himself to danger? The Gemara tells us in Masechet Tainis about the great Nachum Ish Gamzu. Nachum Ish Gamzu lived in a very dangerous home. It was dilapidated. And with every moment, there was an increasing danger that it would collapse. And yet, Nachum Ish Gamzu invites his disciples, his students, to come into his house when he's there and clear out all the furniture. Leave me here. And after they take out all the furniture, Nachum Ish Gamzu leaves the house, and sure enough, immediately the house collapses. How could he do such a thing? To expose his own disciples to such great danger, let alone himself. The Gemara tells us in Yoma about a certain individual, a member of the Jewish nation called Nicanor, who came from Egypt, from Alexandria, by ship to Yerushalayim to dedicate the Sha'arim to the Heichal and the Beis HaMikdash, two great gates. And on the way, there was a storm that threatened to completely destroy the ship. And the members of the crew decided that they would have to throw overboard anything that was heavy. And Nicanor pleaded with them, "Don't throw the gates overboard." And they threw the first gate. When it got to the second one, Nicanor holds on to the gate for all dear life. "Throw me into the sea together with the gate." And the Gemara records the miracle that both gates, together with Nicanor, were washed onto shore, and Nicanor was able to bring his great contribution to the building of the Mikdash. But what were the chances, based on natural law, that he would succeed in doing so? Ain't sulking on this. We don't rely on miracles. And one could perhaps ask, as we get close to Hanukkah, what were the chances that the little band of Chashmonaim would succeed in defeating the Yavanim? And I believe that these questions force us to raise the following question, which is really my question for today. Are there conditions, if met, that permit an individual to place his life into danger? And if there are such conditions, and if we can justify all these episodes in Jewish history that are recorded both in Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh, what are those conditions? And how and when can they be met? And ladies, I would like to go through with you three basic answers to this question based on the research that I have. And as I go through these answers, I'd like you to try to anticipate whether or not these answers will suffice in justifying all the questions that I mentioned before. The first answer is offered by the Ramban, and following in his footsteps, his great disciple, the Rashba. The Ramban, in Parshas Lech Lecha, tells us that Avraham Avinu was guilty of a chet b'shogeg for leaving the land of Israel when there was a great famine. Says the Ramban, Avraham Avinu should have relied on HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he would prevent him from dying due to this famine. And why? Doesn't this undermine our very principle, our very premise, that ain't somchen al nes? Why does the Ramban hold Avraham Avinu accountable for not rely on Hashem? Of course he shouldn't rely on Hashem. Ain't some kind of this. Wasn't Avram justified in packing out with Sarah to leave the land of Israel? And says the Ramban, there's a new concept here of breakthrough. Anoshim shlemim shezchuyoseim gidolos. There's certain unique individuals on the face of the earth throughout Jewish history that represent an enormous connection to Hashem. I would put this Ramban together with the Ramban that we mentioned earlier, in which the Ramban at the end of Chumash Vayikra, Parshas Bukukosai, describes the situation at the end of days, in which the distinction between miracles and nature is completely blurred and completely undermined. Avraham Avinu lived on that level with his merits. There were nisim, there were miracles going on constantly. The Beis Avraham. And the Ramban says, V'lo yisnaig in yonam b'teva klal. The arrangements, the operations of Avraham Avinu and Sarah Avinu were not b'teva. It was not based on nature. The Rashba in a tshuva, based, I think, on the Ramban, without quoting the Ramban, addresses the case of Rav Chanina ben Dosa. We mentioned earlier that Rav Chanina ben Dosa exposed himself to a very dangerous snake. And how did he do so? Says the Rashba, with regard to Rav Chanina ben Dosa, Lo yisnaig in yono al pi teva klal. The same principle that the Ramban applied to Avraham Avinu and to the situation of Akhir Sayyomim, the Rashba applies to Rav Chanina ben Dosa. He experienced miracles on a constant basis. Hayir ragil b'nes. And if a person is ragil b'nes, if he is categorized under that unique classification of zchuyosei merubos, of Gidolei Olam, then he can expose himself to danger and rely on miracles. Says the Turi Evan, the great Shagas Aryeh, in his commentary on Masechta Titus, that Nachum Ish Gamzu, who, as I told you earlier, would stay in the house and it would fall only after he exited the house, he could rely on miracles because Nachum Ish Gamzu Hayaragil Benisim Vekol Matzav Chayav, his entire life was a continuous string of Derech HaNes. And if we take the approach of the Ramban and the Rashba, then for certain giants throughout Jewish history, we can anticipate that they expose themselves to Ness. Ladies, I have to ask you for mechila. I cannot read that clock. So where are we holding? What does it say? 30? 12:35. Okay. We still have a few minutes. Okay, good. I know I have to keep to the time, so I want to live up to my responsibility. I believe that what the Ramban is presenting to us is not the rule, but surely by far the exception to the rule. And I'm hard-pressed to believe that the Ramban's exceptionary rule would really help us to justify all those episodes in Jewish history in which we found the giants of our ancestry who put their lives into danger. Yes, perhaps there are individuals, Yotzei Dofen, Yechidei Skula, there's always an Avraham Avinu, a Nachum Ish Gamzu, a Rav Chanina ben Dosa. But we need to find more principles, more sources that would perhaps permit a person to put himself into danger. And here I want to present to you the first of what I think is the major breakthrough which will have tremendous implications. You may not know that the Chafetz Chaim, who's famous for his work on Lashon Hara as well as his Mishneh Berurah, also wrote a work on the mitzvah of Chesed, Avas Chesed. And in his introduction, he quotes the Gemara about Rab Chanina ben Dosa, who, as I said earlier, put his life into danger, exposing himself to a vicious serpent. And the Chafetz Chaim says that the reason he did so is l'shem hatzolas nefashos. Because when the rumor got out that this serpent was lurking around, coming in and out of its hole, the Jewish people were alarmed. How do we deal with this dangerous situation? Says the Chafetz Chaim, a person is allowed to put their lives into danger to save someone else from a definite danger. And the Chafetz Chaim turns our attention to Avram Avinu, who goes out to battle against the four kings. Says the Chafetz Chaim, this is the source in the Torah for the principle of Hatzolas Nefashos, the great principle of saving lives that allows one to put and expose himself into danger. Avram Avinu went out to battle to save Lot. And although you and I may question, was it really worth it? And we have to discuss Lot as a separate topic. Nevertheless, Avram Avinu felt an absolute commitment, even if it meant exposing himself to danger. The principle, the mitzvah of Lot Kamen al Dam Reyecha, is so precious, is so fundamental, that it even permits a person to expose themselves to danger. If this be the case, then perhaps we can explain Nachum Gamzu. He stayed in the confines of this room in order to save his students. He knew that this dilapidated house would not collapse until he left. And so, for the sake of saving his students, he exposed himself to danger. This, by the way, doesn't answer the problem of Nachum Ish Gamzu completely. Because as we said before, the first thing they took out of the house was the furniture. So why would Nachum Ish Gamzu be permitted to expose his students to danger based on the need to save his possessions? That's not Hatzolas Nefashos. Here I would be tempted to go back to the Rajba's opinion that we mentioned earlier, that Nachum Ish Gamzu was someone who experienced miracles and lived in a different dimension, a different realm of reality. But I have for you another principle, which I found in a source that dates back to the 12th century called the Sefer HaChassidim. And he writes that an individual could put his life into danger if it will create a Kiddush Hashem. Nachum Ish Gamzu, if you go back to the original Gemara, the Gemara says the following. After he asked, where is the Char? Where is the home, so to speak, of this serpent? And the serpent died. The Gemara goes on to say, Natlo al Ktefo. He actually carried the dead serpent on his shoulders. Ve'vil beis hamedrash. The Amar Lahem, and he told his students, Re'u banai, Ein hanachash memis el achet memis. He used this incident, this miraculous event of the death of the serpent, to indicate, to demonstrate to his students that ultimately all of what we experience in life is a punishment that's divinely generated. Ein achet is the source for Misa. And perhaps we can prove the thesis of the Sefer HaChassidim about Kiddush Hashem from the lives of two of our great Nevi'im, Eliyahu and Elisha. They both invoked miracles for the sake of Kiddush Hashem. These two great mitzvahs, whether it's the Chafetz Chaim's mitzvah of Hatzolas Nefashos, or the Sefer HaChassidim's mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, are very unique. A person should never put his life into danger for the sake of any mitzvah of the Taryag, with the exception perhaps of these two. With regard to Hatzolas Nefashos, yes, You can expose yourself to danger for the sake of life itself. There's a balance here. And yes, for the sake of Kiddush Hashem, we find that this mitzvah could demand human life itself in the cases of Yehareg Val Yavar, where a person is required to give up their lives. Surely these mitzvahs are unique, and they weigh heavily within the constellation of mitzvahs. But I still think that these explanations, whether it's the Ramban and the Rashba regarding those who live surrounded by miracles on that level, whether it be the Chafetz Chaim's approach of Hatzolus Nefashos, which could justify Avraham Avinu in the Milchama, whether it be the Sefer HaChassidim in Kiddush Hashem, I don't think that these reasons will justify, will answer our question in most cases. Perhaps we can apply these logical reasons to the situation of Esther, who goes into Ahasuerus against the kingly decree, because she was there to save Klal Yisrael. And even if we stretch it just a bit, in the case of the Chashmonaim, they were going to protect Klal Yisrael, not necessarily against physical annihilation, but certainly against spiritual devastation. And that too could be viewed as Hatzolus Nefashos. However, when we go through Jewish history and we see so many occasions in which Jews put their life into danger, if you'll invite me again, I'd love to discuss with you the case of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, in which, but that's a whole shiur unto itself, in which Jews put their lives into danger, and for what? They had no chance of success. But I would like to quote to you two periods of modern history which just simply disturb our minds if we think halachically about the prohibition of exposing oneself to danger. The first period of time dates back to the Vilna Gaon, 2.5 centuries ago, 3 centuries ago. And as you know, the Vilna Gaon encouraged his Talmidim to settle in the land of Israel. One of his outstanding Talmidim, his great disciple, Rabbi Yisrael Mishklov, the author of a revolutionary work on Zeraim, on agricultural law, called the Pas HaShulchan, writes an introduction to the Sefer in which he describes what life was like. And I say the word life with inverted commas, in the land of Israel. And I'm going to take the liberty to read my loose translation of parts of his introduction. The year is 1813, and I settle in the north, and there's an outbreak of a great plague in the Galilee. We had to flee for our lives. Many of us went into the deserts of Israel. Others went to the forest. Our family traveled to Yerushalayim. My beloved wife, Ashes Neuri, the Tznua, the Yirat Shamayim Henya, died on the 5th of Sivan and was buried on the road to the city of Shfar'am. We arrived in Yerushalayim, and there my beloved son-in-law Yoel, an exceptional scholar, a God-fearing Jew, son of the great Tzaddik Yudel, was taken away from us on the 27th of Tammuz. But the Negev continued, and on the 14th of Av, my 18-year-old daughter Leah Hatznua passed away. Leaving behind a nursing baby, my grandson Eliakim, I suffered tremendous yisurim to raise this boy until he reached the age of 20 and was taken away in the year 1834, the very night after the holiday of Sukkot, following the Shemitah. My son, Bnei Anechmad Nachman, died on Erev Shabbos on the 15th of Av. Biti Anechmad Esther died the following year on the 14th of Av. And then, Bnei Anechmad Zacha Seichel Zev Wolf died at the age of 14 on the 17th of Av. when I received shortly after the horrible news of the death of my parents in the Galil, my great father Rabbi Shmuel, as well as my mother Malka had died, I was heartbroken. I was wallowing in my sorrow. Even my close friends distanced themselves from me. I was flat on my back, crying incessantly, petitioning our Father in heaven to have mercy on us. My daughter, the Tznua Shendel, a very young girl, was ill, lying by my side. My tears were flowing like water over all that had transpired. I would go on and on and on, but I won't be able to continue this year. He describes how they resettled in the Galil, and then a second plague broke out in the Galil, and he lost the rest of his family. That's when he took upon himself to write the Parsha Shulchan. And I would like to ask the following question. How could the great Vilna Gaon encourage his students to live in the land, a land that is beset by plagues? Was there some sort of pikuach nefesh? Was he saving lives by sending his students? Was he expecting that his students would live on the level as described by the Ramban of Zchuyoseim Merubos, V'kol Chayeim Al Pidnes? Was this meant to be a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, of Yehorik Val Yavo? And if, my friends, we move our clocks fast forward to the 19th century, to the 20th century, there's a wonderful work, a biography, called Ha'ish Al HaChoma. It tells the story of the life of the great Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld. And in this biography, he tells the story in the name that he heard, the biographer, in the name of Rav Moshe Blood. I don't know if anyone here knows the Blood family. So you can't suspect that this story is invalid or inaccurate. He writes, it was the year 1920. The Arabs rioted. It was dangerous to leave the threshold of one's home. Our Rebbe, Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnenfeld, had accepted upon himself earlier to serve as the Moel at a Bris Milah. And no matter how much his family members tried to dissuade him, they begged him not to go. The Rebbe wrapped himself in a talis, donned his tefillin, and went to the Bris, walking alone from his home. He walked through Shar Shechem, the most dangerous place for Jews. And then he arrived at the place of the Bris. When he returned, his joy knew no bounds. It had become clear to him that had he not shown up to be the Moel, there would be no one there to circumcise the child. No one was willing to walk at that time, at that dangerous time, to officiate as a Moel. And Rav Bloy said, I asked Rebbe, the rule is that shluchei mitzvah einim nizakim, messengers of mitzvahs are not, will suffer no damage, but the makom d'shchiach hezeka, nevertheless, if it's a dangerous area, we're not allowed to do such a thing. He responded, they will do me no harm. And then I asked him a second question, why did you choose to walk through the dangerous Shar Shechem rather than through the less dangerous Shar Yafo in the year 1920? And he responded, Ma? V'chi nafkir et harova? Me'achogei Shar Shechem? Can we allow the Arabs to lay claim to the quarter that bounds, that borders on Shar Shechem? If we are afraid to walk this, said Rav Yosef Chaim, they will rejoice in their success in expelling us from Yerushalayim. We must not give up any part of the holy city of Yerushalayim. And 9 years later, in the year 1929, the Arabs rioted, violently killing Jews all up and down the borders of the land of Israel. In 1929, on Friday, the 17th of Av, the barbarous murder reached its apex. And it was then, on that Shabbos, that the Arabs slaughtered 59 Jews in the city of Hebron, amongst them 27 Hebron Yeshiva Bachrim. It was on that bloody Shabbos when no Jews would even dream of leaving their homes that once again Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld would leave his house to serve as a moel at the bris of the youngest son of Rav Aaron Weingarten, if anyone knows the Weingarten family. And once again, no one had the chutzpah to even dream of asking Rav Yosef Chaim to officiate at this bris. The danger was tangible. And when they asked him why, he was a man in his 80s already by then. He said, "Kidei shelo yechashvu yachshvu haravim sheitzlichu legaresh regel Yehudi afilu mipina achat." And I ask myself the question, how is it possible for the Talmidei Agra to settle in the land of Israel and face such danger? How is it possible for Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld to expose himself on the very day of the Arab murders to such danger? Certainly for the sake of a bris milah, we don't do so. And I believe, therefore, and again, it's a chiddush, and I'm not here to paskin, that there is another category, call it a fourth category, which allows a Jew to put his life into danger. And that is when a person feels that he's missing something in his life, that his life itself is not worth living unless he stands for what he believes. How could a Jew in the Holocaust expose himself to danger to blow shofar smuggled into the camps? How could Jews gather together in the barracks to light a Hanukkah candle? Does the mitzvah of their Hanukkah constitute a mitzvah that is so great that it overrides pikuach nefesh? Ein sochen al nes. I believe that a Jew can make a decision that there's a certain cause that is so paramount that it is as great as life itself. Ask me how a person can make such a decision. How can he evaluate the situation such? What's at stake? Is it protection of the community? Is it Hatzolus Nefashos? Is it Kiddush Hashem? There's so many variables that could play into this decision. I don't know. Perhaps the decision is instinctual, spontaneous, rather intellectual and premeditated. The decision itself is implicit in the statement Kihem Chayenu, the mashal of Rabbi Akiva about the fish out of water. Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld exposed himself to danger, and I can't tell you why. Maybe it was Hatzolus Nefashos. Maybe he felt that if we don't maintain our presence in the land, who knows what the Arabs will do to us. I don't know. Maybe it was a case of Kiddush Hashem, if we don't rely on the Chafetz Chaim, I don't know. But when I ask myself the following question, was Rav Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld a physician saving a life? Was he a fireman or a first responder? I think we have to admit that the answer is no. Was this a machayim of Kiddush Hashem? I think we have to admit that the answer is no. We are here in Eretz Yisrael. The question is, do we love the land? What does it mean to us? We give up a great deal to be here, and we're always sort of kvetching about that. We take pride in the fact that we gave up so much in Chutz Laretz. Some of us travel back and forth in order to make a living. But who can say that they can follow the examples of the Talmidei Agra or of Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld and declare, "I cannot be without it"? The land and myself, the land and the Jewish people are one and the same. And this is what Jewish history, I think, is about. This is what the Shoah is about, on the positive side. When a Jew finally says, without the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, without the Ner Chanukah, my life is meaningless. And maybe, perhaps, we could even give it another kneish. And with this I'll conclude. Perhaps one could argue that by exposing oneself to danger, by living for a cause, we save ourselves. The alternative is very close to the end of our lives. In those rare situations, when a person makes that spontaneous decision, he is there to make a declaration about what is crucial, what is paramount in his life. Yiratzon b'fanecha me'pi his will. Shiyishmerenu v'yatzilenu mikol ra. V'yachish lanu ha'yeshua. V'yikarev. B'yas goel. V'mherzim min ha'yeshua.